It's opening up and I'm in a free fall.
Now, should you take this away from me as well, from my face? Should harm befall him, you'll bring my gray hair down and you'll forge to the shoal.
You can hear the pit opening up. You can see the guy going down. All that's left is gray hair sticking up while he's going down. Pit's closing and you're looking at the gray hair. Verse 30.
So now when I come back to your servant, my father...
Who's he talking to?
Who's talking?
Judah.
Do you understand? This is Judah talking for 13 verses now. Mm-hmm. This is the longest thing in the whole Torah. Mm-hmm. Longest speech. That's why it kills me when all these people call this the Joseph story. It's like this speech is chopped liver. Why? There's nothing to be learned from this speech? I'm telling you, it's the heart and soul of Messianic Jewish identity.
So now when I come back to your servant, my father...
When who comes back?
Judah.
And the lad is not with us!
What lad?
Benjamin.
And whose life, his own life, is bound up?
Jacob's.
See, that's Keshur, you know, bound up.
It will be, verse 31, that when he sees that the lad is no more, he will die.
Do you understand how involved this is? That this guy, Judah, he always knows who he's talking to. He's like airing a family problem here for 13, 14 verses now to the viceroy of Egypt in front of everybody, including the Egyptians in the court. It's like, get the psychiatrist. Bring in the guys with the white coats. This guy is like on a rampage here talking about, you know, he's talking to a psychiatrist.
Well, he's making a bid, so just whoever he's talking to, he doesn't know, might say, yeah, you know, well, okay, we won't keep Benjamin here.
There's a fine line between being nuts. There's a fine line here between being nuts. Just nuts. And the fact that you're talking to God while you're talking to the viceroy, and that the viceroy happens to be Joseph. It's a very narrow line you're in here. And he's going on while he's talking, and he's saying, the truth. And the truth is stranger than fiction, and it's absurd, and that's why he's like nuts. Because he's dealing with the truth. He's being transparent, he's being open, he's being honest, he's being loving. And that makes it nuts. And you're living in a world where the world says God isn't here, and the world says you certainly don't have time to glorify God, let alone he's here. And I'm telling you, you better glorify God the Father first before you have a time to exist, because you better be chopped liver or else God the Father isn't going to get glorified first. And that if you can't get that ahead in your agenda, Joseph spent 2 years in jail figuring it out, the Canaanite danced his way to prosperity by getting disinherited, talking about Eliezer, and Judah right here is like doing a two-step on a line that's disappeared. Your servant will have brought down the gray hair of your servant, our father. Now listen to that word, our father. Who's he talking to? Our father. Our father who art in heaven.
Not that father, Tom.
It will be that when he sees that the lad is no more, he will die, and your servant will have brought down the gray hair of your servant, our father, in grief to Sheol. Judah is talking to who?
Joseph.
Now he's talking about your servant, our father. How do you get our father slipped in there? Is he talking about like the ten? Talking about Benjamin. I mean, it was one wife, and now it's our father.
He's speaking corporately for all the brothers as one.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think he's Joseph.
Now, the guys who want to dig in and say it's Joseph will say he sneaked that in there to go after him.
But how would he say it?
I understand.
He'll say it the same way.
I understand.
Either way.
I understand.
I know. I get it.
And I want to factor in something else.
You're saying he's figuring it's Joseph, and if it is Joseph, then he's going to be part of our father. If I'm trying to make the case
that Judah knew, then I'm going to say he slipped that in to go after Joseph.
Right.
But if I'm trying to say Judah's just glorifying his father and he knows it's Jacob, maybe he's got the idea behind that, that God is our Father too. And I'm also saying that when he's slipping in the brothers, he's slipping in the brothers in relationship to the Father, and he's slipping in all the mothers at that time.
I don't think it's a conscious effort on, I mean, this is absurd, crazy to say, but it's not a conscious effort on his part to say our Father. I think it's more of the corporate idea, you know, of like, hey, he's thinking about Jacob. He's thinking about his father.
Why didn't he say my father?
He's including all the brothers. He's including everybody that's there at that point.
But up until then, he was going, your servant and your servant our father. All of a sudden, now your servant my father.
Could be a reference in a different sense.
But it's also, he's also been talking about Benjamin and how he needs to take him back.
So that's right.
Pointing out that it's Benjamin's father and my father.
That's right. I agree with you. That's where I come down.
And I think he's positioning.
But remember, I'm trying to get you to see all lenses, including ones you disagree with,
right.
Because I want you to understand what meekness is about, and I want you to understand what perception is about, and I want you to understand what Abraham's up against when he goes, Nashuva Alechem, we will return to you. Who's he talking to, and about what? I want to deal with the fact that when you're in these situations that are nuts, and you're an insane person, because you're trying to somehow glorify God your Father, in a world where the world is like, what are you talking about? We're going to get the white coats right now, because you're a religious nut. And you're trying to live in this world while you're talking to God and your chopped liver. And you happen to have one moment when if you're chopped liver, you can glorify your Father, mm-hmm. including your Father in heaven. But that's what it takes.
Yeah.
I'm talking about meekness to the point where you disappear and where he lives. And guess what? It's only Yeshua talking because you're chopped liver. You decreased until you disappeared. I'm talking about being nuts. You don't exist. You're just the presence of God in a room. And you don't really exist. That's your self-image. You hear what I'm saying here?
Isn't that the Stephen...
How's your girlfriend come along with her diet? Just fine. She disappeared. Go ahead, Michael.
I said, is that the same... thing is, that Stephen speaks before they offed him.
Yeah.
He spoke the Torah, he spoke his heart, and suddenly changed and spoke something he knew was going to glorify God because of his life.
Verse 32. Let's see where it goes. For your servant pledged himself for the land to my father. Now it's my father. You know, it was our father, now it's my father. Gotta watch these switches.
Well, first it was corporate, now it becomes personal.
That's right. For your servant pledged himself for the land to my father. Is God watching? Who keeps his word? Who taught us to keep our word? Who spoke and the world came into being? Saying, if I do not bring him back to you, I will be culpable for sin against my father all the days to come. What's that mean?
He's in trouble.
He's in big trouble.
Big trouble is right.
I'll be culpable for sin against my father forever. All the days to come. The guy will never forgive me.
He's making good
for in the world to come even, I'm like dead meat.
Making good for it.
The world to come, I'm dead against my father. When I get gathered to my ancestors, my father's still there and I'm in deep water still. This is really tough. This is going to go beyond the grave because your word endures, and when you die, your father, you're still culpable all the days, not all my days, all the days to come. All the days. Till my father's dead, and then what? It still rests with me until I'm dead. And then what? It still rests. Why? Because it is. Where am I going to be? Doesn't matter. It rests. It's still there. It's not going away. Verse 33. So now pray, let your servant stay instead of the lad, as servant to my Lord, but let the lad go up with his brothers. The guy is still talking. And he doesn't stop there either.
And nobody stopped him either.
Including Joseph. Verse 34, the last verse. For how can I go up to my father when the lad is not with me? But who's he talking to now? See, this is God the Father now. Because he's nuts. He already made his plea. Let the lad go up with his brothers. He's done. Why has he got to talk about how deep his feelings are on this matter?
What is it?
If he's not talking beyond this moment.
What does it say?
I've read part of it. For how can I go up to my father when the lad is not with me. How can I do this? He already said, let the lad go up, let me be your servant, let me stay in jail for his place. I mean, he's done. But he's adding it. He's pounding this thing. And what's he pounding? For how can I go up to my father when the lad is not with me? Then, now look at this. Here's where the poetry comes together. Then would I see the ill fortune that would come upon, and it's really Yimsa that would find, my father. It's back to that moment in the pit with the gray hair sticking up, where the pit opened up and the gray hairs were going down. Then I would see the ill fortune that would come upon. You know, last time, when I took Benjamin, and I mean, when I took Joseph and all that, you know, we came back and we told him, you know, but this time if I come back and tell him, I got my eyes open and he already said his gray hairs are going to go down to Sheol, and I got the picture before I even see him. Last time, you know, we all of us tried to shake him out of it, and he was sort of moribund for, you know, a few days or weeks, and he, you know, really hurting over this Joseph deal. But this round, I'm going to do it again. I can't handle it. I'd rather be dropped dead. I'd rather go to jail. But I can't do that to my father. Why? Why? Why am I chop liver and I don't want to live anymore? Whatever. Well, I can't see. How could I go up to my father when the lad is not with me? For I would see the ill fortune that would find my father. You know, behind the viceroy, he's looking as Joseph. But there's another dimension going on, and that's God looking down on Cain Abel saying, I think sibling rivalry just got figured out in this family. I think they get it.
I think you're a friend too.
So I'm ready to raise Joseph from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to have the family come together. I got unity. Jesus, he said, I prayed that there might be one that the world might know. Well, this is the moment when they became one. This is the first gospel. This is what Jesus is looking at in John 17 when he's praying for Jew-Gentile unity. It's Cain-Abel unity. It's not making Abel a martyr and having him go away and not have a line. So he goes through all this trouble to give a line to somebody. And he guess who the somebody is?
So how far beyond duty?
Judah, the guy that wants to marry Canaan.
Right. Huh? How far beyond duty does this go for Judah?
How far beyond duty?
Yeah. Or is this?
Let me tell you
strictly duty.
Well, for Judah.
Now, where's his?
He gave his word. He's got no way out. He said, "I'll stand as surety for the land." He promised his father. He gave his word.
So he's fulfilling his obligation.
But do you understand when you give your word what it means? Go to jail. Drop dead. Be chopped liver. Glorify the Father. And don't do it again. If you do it again, drop dead. Drop dead before you do it again. And fail it.
So whatever his obligation would work out to be, he had to follow through with it.
Absolutely. So Vayigash. And drew near to him. Vayigash, you know, Vayigash, Vayigash, Elav, you know, you pop. Da-dun, da-dun. They're calling you. Drew near to him. That's reconciliation. Judah. You're going down, man. You're going down. Now talk for 13 verses. Talk nonstop for more. 18 to 34. 16 verses plus one, I guess. 16 verses. Guy went wild. And there's a learning experience here, see?
So, you know, why, it's a, you know, my question is like, why are none of the other brothers saying anything? Why are none of the other brothers going like, hey, you know what? I'm going to stand with my brother here who would keep me here too, you know?
Let me tell you something. You know what I tell you, Judah, that was the longest speech in the Torah? Well, Joseph actually comes back with the longest speech in the Torah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Judah's speech here is like, starts on 18, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 17 verses, all right? And then Joseph starts on 45, verse 1, and he's talking and talking and talking and talking. Let's see. So tell my father all the weight I carry in Egypt, verse 13. He flung himself. No, he only talks for 13 verses.
Yeah.
So it is Judah.
I thought so.
But he would have talked forever. Instead, he flung himself on the neck of Benjamin, and then that breaks the ice. Until the guy starts kissing, that's it.
You mean Yosef, yeah.
Yeah. So nobody says anything. I mean, Joseph turns around and says, Geshuna Eli, come near me. Throws everybody out of the court. Come here, come to me. And they look at him like, huh?
So what Yehuda actually did was draw Joseph entirely out.
That's right. When he said, Vayigash Eliav, he appeared to him.
He got real.
Joseph turns around and says, Geshuna Eli, come draw to me. And it's a plural, Geshu. You all draw near to me. Not just to Yehuda. He didn't say just to Judah. Gashli, draw near to me. Geshu, plural. You all draw near to me. Joseph could no longer restrain himself the presence of all who were stationed around him. He called out, him, everyone leave me! Gets him out, no one around. He put forth his voice in weeping. The Egyptians heard. Everybody hears the guy screaming. What's he screaming? Ani Yosef! I'm Joseph! My father's still alive! Avi Chai! Some people there say, you know, Judah got him feeling guilty about what he was doing to his poor father. I don't buy it. You know why? He knew what he was doing before he was taking Benjamin in the first place. And his father was saying, no. He didn't just discover it. He knew it then when he opened his mouth. He had to confront that in order to get him down there. This is not a first realization. And Joseph? Joseph sitting there saying, I don't think that's going to happen. Joseph's been playing for that for a year plus. He's been thinking about it. He put Simeon in jail to get a hold of Benjamin. He's had a year plus. He didn't send for the wagons. Now he knows his dad's an old guy. Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have sent the wagons so my dad could come right down. Now I feel guilty that I didn't send the wagons. So now I'm asking if he's alive. Well, I don't buy it. Here's why. His brothers were not able to answer him, for they were confounded in his presence. So if he's guilty, what's he going to say? If Joseph's feeling guilty that he tortured his father, you know, he made it to Israel, to Egypt, he's a big man, sent for his father, he knows the famine's coming, now he's going to go torture his father by just staying out of sight, out of mind, because, you know, he got sold into slavery, he's out, first thing he ought to do is call up Dad, hello Dad, I'm okay, I'm in Egypt. You bad guy, you didn't tell me you're alive. Why are you playing games with me? After he asks, is my father alive? Nobody says anything to him. Now you're Joseph. What's your next move? I'm Joseph. Is my father still alive? Now you're feeling guilty. What's your next word? Don't look at what's in the scripture. Tell me what you're going to say if you're guilty. Fill it in.
I'm just a big man now.
Oh, you're going to still be hung up on the subject, right? Well, here's what he says. Joseph said to his brothers, pray, Geshuna Eli, come close to me. Now what's he going to say after that?
Don't be angry with yourselves.
Okay.
Got it.
They came close. Oh, come close to me.
What's he going to say after that?
He threw everybody out. Come here.
He's going to say, remember. Yeah. Remember, by the way, boys, guys.
Mm-hmm. He said, I'm Joseph, your brother, who you sold into Egypt. I'm Yosef Asher Mechaitem Otiva Mitzrayim.
He's going to take him back to the last encounter.
I'm Joseph, who you sold into Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay, then what's he going to say?
He's going to probably recount to him, hey, but I made good here. God did good for me. And?
Well, what about his dad?
Well, his dad's obviously involved intimately.
Well, if you're feeling guilty about your dad, you're going to drop that to prove to your brothers a few things right now? I mean, you're guilty. But, you know, you just asked if your father's alive.
You're making the case. Did he feel actually guilty?
Right. I'm asking. I'm not making a case. I'm asking the question.
Why would he feel? I don't understand why he would feel guilty.
You're the viceroy, and you didn't send for your father, and you're absentee. You're missing without. You're Vietnam. You're missing without action.
I'm MIA. But I'm in Egypt. I'm stuck here. I got to work with Pharaoh, you know, or something like that.
You're MIA. Now, you know, the brothers you got a problem with, but your dad. Hey, Dad, I'm MIA.
You know, the question begs itself. It's like, first of all, Yosef doesn't know everything. He doesn't know how Pharaoh's going to react.
That's a
maybe,
problem.
Maybe Pharaoh, maybe he thinks, hey, the guy's going to then throw me out or have my head cut off or something because
well,
I want to go back.
Well, he's got to dance a little bit.
You know, so it's like, I mean, yeah. There's a lot of questions.
But right now, he just threw everybody out. And he's talking alone to his brothers. And he already asked once, is my father alive? And it's the gong show. No answer yet. My point is, I'm Joseph who you sold into slavery.
He has to,
no answer yet.
He has to have the brothers remember so they start becoming conscious of what's going on.
I think, it just seems to me like, because Judah was just telling me about his conversation with his dad. It's
right.
Kind of out of place for him to be questioning, is my dad still alive?
Right.
Because
right.
He was just talking about his dad,
right.
You know?
Exactly right.
So it seems more like maybe seeing his family and hearing that his dad has missed him all this time, too, you know, bringing up all these feelings like, you know, I miss my dad and the family, you know. Not so much do I really believe he's still alive, but think maybe he hasn't thought about his dad. You know, thought about this is my heritage because, you know, he has an obligation to Egypt now and for what he's supposed to be doing there. And maybe he's...
I think in part maybe he's thinking, you know, is he okay to come down here? I think that's out there.
Okay.
Does he live enough to walk, run, jump, cheer, and forward somersault? Or, you know, has he got a kidney problem? I mean, what's going on? Mm-hmm. But after that, it's back to the brothers. But now, do not be pained. Do not let him... I mean, he got his answer because they didn't answer. They didn't, like, look like corpses all of a sudden. They look like they're in the middle of a gong show. And, you know, it's a difference. They don't look a little more sullen after he asks if his brother, if his father's alive. They're looking at him like, we're on the planet Mars, and you're an automaton talking to us. And, you know, you're talking in perfect Hebrew, and we have no clue how you know Hebrew. You got one of those voice-activated intelligent computers.
That's right. They're trying to figure out...
This is the 20th century.
Is this for real? I'm standing here and I'm hearing this and I'm seeing this unfold before
I mean, they're
eyes.
Like thinking, is this a statue?
I can't believe this. Is this... Could this actually be... They got to start thinking, could
am
this
I
actually be Yosef?
Am I a psycho? It's like,
no.
Is this a dream? I mean, what happened here?
Or is this more of a trap?
And he goes on, do not be pained and do not let upset in your eyes and sold me here, for it was a safe life that God sent me on before you. He doesn't stop there. So it's 2 years now that the famine has been in the midst of land. I mean, just right into the dream. And look at this. He's not trying to prove them about the dream, right? See, so the dream's coming true. You understand? He already knows the dream's coming true. He doesn't have to prove that anymore.
Right.
And there's still another 5 years in which there'll be no plowing or harvest. He's just giving them the calendar. See, he's been into that because he knew they were coming back 5 or 6 more years. That's why he could pick off Simeon. That's why he could pick off Benjamin this time. I mean, he had all the time he needed to frame it any way he wanted. If it's going slow, he got a few more years slack time here. He got all the time he needs. He's Elohim. So what goes around comes around, and when you got all the cards finally, you should live so long. But you will if you glorify God the Father. There's the missing piece. And how do you do that? By being chopped liver and committing suicide psychologically. Like doing it God's way where, you know, you don't create any room to live because the room you have to live, you're using glorifying the Father. And after that, your son's a holocaust. After that, you're disinherited. After that, the ranch is gone. After that, you're chopped liver. You used your chits doing what? So the priest, who looks in the conversation from the person he's talking to God the Father and back to the person he's talking to, when he's looking at God the Father, that's your moment for doing what? Being Yehudah personified. Being the one in whom God the Father is praised. That's identity formation. That's Messianic Jewish identity formation. Right? In a nutshell. We're talking about a spiritual dynamic for living.
Sure.
If you're not doing it, you're not even 50% there. You need a head transplant. Your head is not filled with light. For your head to fill with light, you're chopped liver. Meekness. The one in whom your sense of self-importance is not something you feed upon. You don't get a swelled head over your sense of self-importance. You don't feed on the important things you're doing for God. It's not what you feed on.
Let alone the important things you're doing for yourself, right?
You don't have time for that at all. And you don't have important things to do for
no,
the Father.
No, I don't
either.
Have any time for this.
So you, no,
no
time.
None.
So he goes on and he says, 5 years more following harvest. So God sent me out before you to make a remnant on earth to keep you alive as a great body of survivors. I mean, they're still standing there like, this guy's speaking Hebrew. he got the interpreter out of here and now he's just speaking Hebrew. I mean, he had a course. That was it. He took a course at the university. He was at Hebrew University. He took a course. Jerusalem. He had the course.
Olpan.
He took Olpan from somebody.
Their wheels are turning now.
Their wheels are turning. They're not saying a word.
Their wheels
so now it was
on.
Not you that sent me here, but God. There it is. You know, God the Father being glorified. He's playing a God card. He's not done. He's made me father to Pharaoh. He's made me what? An Av. There it is, that father card again. I got the destiny in my hand. My free will is his destiny. My free will is the generations to come destiny. What I do affects them. I create destinies. Av. That's true for any father over any house.
I don't know. If I'm his brother, I really don't care. I'm still thinking about, is this really Yosef?
That's
this,
true for any
Yosef?
Person that teaches Torah to any person
yeah.
else.
See it talking again. Like Yosef?
Yeah, Av is anybody that teaches Torah to somebody else. That's the Av. It's you when you're in Shabbat school teaching children. It's you when you're raising another generation. It's you when you're imparting wisdom to somebody else because you've been down the road and you lived it and they're looking for help. So when you're in a spiritual dynamic and you were there already. Before they were, you are. You're in a co-creator role. That's a spiritual dynamic. I'm talking about the Avkar. I'm saying we all get it all the time. All the time. There's always people that have less experience that come to you. Always. And the more experienced you are and the more mature you are in how you live in the spiritual dynamic of your life, the more people are going to grab you and say, hey, you got to know about this, blah, 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 blah. And you've been there, done that. You're sitting there in your head, been there, done that. The minute you say, been there, done that, you got to like look at God the Father and go, hallelujah.
Thank you.
Yes.
The minute you say, been there, done that, it's Yehuda. This is the one in whom God is glorified. You're looking right now at Yehuda. It's identity formation. Boom. And you're an Av at that point. You're a creator of a destiny. Because they're going to do something different because you've been there, done that, and you're going to tell them how to be meek about this thing. How to be conciliatory. How to do the godly thing. How to walk in the light. And now it's a new head transplant going on. You're walking in the head of light now. You got your eyes on God, and you're teaching them how to have their head in the light. And you're imparting Torah and its instruction. It's God. You understand what I'm talking about here?
Yes.
Dynamic. Mm-hmm. I'm taking lessons from Judah's life and abstracting them to your personal situation. I'm saying it's a dynamic and it unfolds for everybody all the time. He's still talking though. So now it was not you that sent me, right? God, he's made me Av to Pharaoh and Lord. There's that Elohim deal. Lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. I'm God on earth in Egypt and it's the empire. Who's he telling? The brothers. Who got kicked out? The Egyptians. He's screaming in Hebrew. They can hear it through the walls. As worried as he is about getting kicked out of Egypt, he's going crazy right now. He's been talking for 8 straight verses here. It's the gong show for the brothers. He's talking Hebrew. Make haste! Go up to my father! Finally, verse 9, he gets back to his father. Yes, David, you're right. He knows his father's alive. Make haste! Go up to my father and say to him! But the guys that will say that, he's worried. They're saying, well, no, he's trying to get to his father and get him down there in a hurry because he feels guilty because he, you know, haven't talked to him. Thus says your son, Yosef, God has made me Lord over all Egypt. Come down to me, do not remain. You shall stay in the region of Goshen. You shall be near to me, you and your sons and the sons of your sons, your sheep. Boy, the Egyptians didn't want to hear that. Why don't you say oxen first? Your sheep, your oxen, all that is yours. Verse 11, I will sustain you there. There's still 5 years of famine left, lest you be as disinherited, you and your household and all that is yours. You know, you sowed it, you reaped it. Jacob said, I didn't sow that. Yeah, you sowed it. How'd you sow it? Favoritism. No. Verse 12, here your eyes see as well as my brother Benjamin's eyes, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. Benjamin sees. He can see little Joseph coming out behind the ears here. He can see Rachel alive and well in me. He gets it. Mm-hmm. We all look alike, you know. Me and Rachel and Benjamin. That's why I've been spoofing you here. That's why you spoofed me, too. But it's no blamer game. So tell my father of all the weight I carry in Egypt. I mean, I'm out here telling me to come down and get some land. And of all that you've seen, to make haste, bring my father, down here. And they're like, man, this guy knows how to talk. He's a speech maker. Verse 14, he flung himself upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck. Well, that starts to break things up. Then he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. Now, they're watching him with Benjamin. Nothing. After he finishes on Benjamin, he goes after these guys one by one. Then he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. After this, verse 15, his brothers spoke with him. He probably kissed every single guy before the gong show ended. The news was heard in Pharaoh's household. I mean, you know, Egypt's going up for grabs. Now, I want to jump really quickly here, just to Luke 6, 12 to 16. This is Yeshua picking his court. He's picking the 12 tribes of Israel. He's starting his own 12 tribe confederacy to reach the nations of the world. Now, there's continuities here, because who's he going after? Well, why didn't he pick one Jew, you know, one Israelite for every tribe? Why didn't we have all 12 tribes of Israel represented here?
They weren't around.
Yeah, the destiny card. We already spent, let's whore after other gods with the Israel card, because Ephraim turned around and had a 10-tribe pantheon dedicated to the god of the golden calf that he had erected there in Dan.
Yeah,
and we had 19 generations of kings there that never turned away from the sin of what? Jeroboam, son of Nadab, the Ephraimite. So he leads this coalition of defecting Israelites. I think it's great. Joseph, you know, he gets embalmed. All right? He has two kids that gives Egyptian names to, gets them grafted in. They go up and split the kingdom and form the 10 against 2 deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got a million of tribes up there. And they're after this god that they put up, which is a golden calf. And they put it right in Bethel, which is the stairway to heaven. Jacob was dreaming on the ladder. He saw the angels going up and down in Bethel. And Dan and Bethel are going to be the places where they build this. Dan is a serpent. And that's the tribal symbol. And here they're going to put golden calf on the stairway to heaven. And I'd say, redline all the funds, make sure they don't go to God's house in the temple, because we want to keep Israel, you know, sovereign secular nation dedicated to money in the name of, you know, other gods. And nobody, for 19 kings, did anything about it, good or bad, in Israel. Nobody could take on what the first guy did, Jeroboam. So then God sent the Assyrians, knocked them off, warned Judah, the same thing had happened to them. Judah paid no regard, re-imprisoned everybody, they got knocked off, and this is 170 years later, and they go whopped out by the Babylonians. And then he sends Jeremiah to say it's only 70 years and you get back. But the point is, we couldn't learn a thing about watching him knock off 10 tribes. And it's Judah looking at it. At the tribal level, we don't take a clue. But later on, finally, we saw Yeshua when the card is dealt to him for silver.
Right.
And of course, Judah sells Judah for silver.
Right. Sells Yeshua.
Right. Judah sells the son of Judah.
You're saying sells.
And I'm talking about the tribe.
Okay.
And I'm Judah talking about tribal.
Sells. Okay.
And I'm talking, that's the end then for the that just unwound by Yigash.
Right.
When Judah sells his own brother for silver, it's like he didn't learn a thing from Vayigash.
Right.
And Jesus is saying, you could have been the greatest to the treasurer, Judah. Why? Because he's got the Judah card.
Yeah.
Now everybody's busy playing the Joseph card, and Jesus is telling Judah that he got the Judah card. Get a clue. And the Av, Judah, deals the Av card. So the destiny, God keeps the destiny, deals it to his own son. Boom! Go get sold for silver. Okay. Now who sells him for silver?
Yehuda.
A guy handpicked by Jesus after an all-night prayer vigil with God.
Ooh.
Yeah, get it straight. When you want to worry about betrayal, when you want to worry about contradiction, when you want to worry about paradox, when you want to worry about things that are irreconcilable, when Jesus gets the card, he goes and picks the guy to betray him with his eyes wide open after a night of prayer and getting it straight from God the Father. Here's the card. Judah is going to sell you for silver. But I am Judah. Don't worry. Judah's still going to sell you for silver. I want you to make a disciple out of him. Okay. I want you to give him the full time. Okay. I want you to let him hold the silver before he sells you for silver. I want you to do it with your eyes open, and I want you to have a 3-year ministry so you got sold out real good. Well, now, just a minute, guys.
Yeah.
We're talking about you walking in the footprints of Judah. We're talking about you guys now are adopted in, Gentile and Jew. You got the Jesus card. Who got the Judah card?
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, when you're worrying about whether Satan's attacking you or not.
Mm. Are you saying... forced issue of being sold out.
I'm talking about chopped liver and what your life is and what it's coming to. I'm talking about, you know, how the cards stack up. I'm talking about the destiny that you get to walk in when you're walking in the footsteps. I'm talking about taboos because, remember, I just told Messianic Judaism, we're going to be small, assimilated, intermarried, despised, scorned, treated as the B word, and now I got all the kids out of here, I can say it. Because we don't belong to the Gentiles, we don't belong to the Jews, and we're intermarried. So we're not legitimate. And we're ripping guys off from the church, and we're ripping guys off from Judaism, and everybody hates us because we're ripping all these people off. Like there's 20,000 of us, and there's millions and millions in the church, the Jewish community. Everybody's scared to death over 20,000 people. I'm talking about you being insignificant, chopped liver. I'm saying get used to it. I'm saying, well, whoever wasn't chopped liver? Judah when he was in Canaan and God was killing his sons? Or Yeshua when he was being sold for silver after he had an all-night prayer vigil? Here, Luke 12:6-12. It happened now in the days that he went out to the mountain to pray, so he has an all-nighter out there. He's spending the night, and that word via nikterevon is through the night. It's like, this is an all-nighter prayer vigil. He's like, he's going at it. And he's having a discussion with God where he's like, he's having a planning committee meeting in prayer. This is substantive prayer. This isn't just, oh God, you know, just give me 12 names to write down, you know, so I can just go do it. It's like, I got a lot of people to choose from, and who am I going to pick? And now, what about him? What about him? What about him? What about him? And this guy here. Yeah, okay. And who are we going to pick last? Oh, you're going to pick Judas Iscariot. That's the last guy? Yeah, last. Put him last on the list. All the disciples? Yeah, put him last on the list, Judas Iscariot. I got it. Last guy is who? Here he goes. And you can check all the Matthew references. And what happens, he picks 4, 4, and 4. If you look at the 4, 4, and 4, the four are always the same on all. There's four lists, including Acts. Luke, Mark, Matthew. They all have lists of the 12. And if you look at the 12, it's these four, and these four, and these four. Some of the orders change, but only within bands of four. So you always have pairs, and you always got... They're always going to give you two at a time, and the fours are always going to be the same four, except the order can change, except the first is always the same. So 1, 5, and 9 are always the same on the list. The head guy out of the four are always the same. You know, there's just an order going on while there's some variety in the list. Hmm. Houses, heads, destinies. When it came day, he summoned the disciples, he, and having chosen from them the 12, also the apostles, he named, verse 14, he chose Simon, who's also named Peter. See, there were two Simons, so he named one Peter. And the first Simon he chose is going to name, have a nickname, Rock, because I'm going to make him the Catholic Church, right? Because he's going to be the Rock. He's going to be the Dome of the Rock. He's going to be the Rock personified. He's going to be the Rock that followed us in the wilderness. He's going to be the Rock of Rocks. He's going to be Sewer. He's going to be God the Rock that I'm going to build, you know?
I love your Gentile interpretation.
I was giving you every rock possible. Just to tell you, you know, every possibility, because I'm not throwing stone at any of those. I'm throwing stones at all of those. Oh, yeah, stones. Just one stone. So, he chose Simon, whom he also named Petron rock, and Andrew, his brother. So now he chose this guy and his brother. Get it? Mm-hmm. Okay. And James and John. Now, who's James?
Son of Zebedee.
Yeah, and who's John?
His brother.
Ah, another pair of brothers. So in the first four, he chose this pair of brothers and that pair of brothers.
Pair of brothers.
How do you like that? Pairs. And he chose a pair here and a pair there, and brothers both times. And those are the first four. And you know something? A lot of inner circle guys here. It's first four. Who's Simon? First guy up. Petros, Peter. Rock. Now, he's going to build a church on Peter, right? Now, Judah, when you build a church on Judah, what does he do?
Sells it.
You mean Ishiria?
No.
No.
Yehuda.
Oh, Yehuda.
The first church, you know, the Jewish people. Oh, yeah, I shouldn't call them the church. Although Judah is obviously singled out. This is the one in whom God is praised. And it's obviously an eclectic population since the son of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob
is
Judah. Judah goes and tries to be a Canaanite, right? He does everything he can to assimilate into being a Canaanite. Goes all out. And God gives him a lot of slack to do it, right? First, you know, chapter 38. So what happens this time? Simon is going to be Peter. First guy up, he's going to build a church on him, right? He's going to build everything on Judah, King Jew, King Maker. Now we're going to build everything on who? Simon, the first Simon chosen, whose also name is Peter, which we know means Kephar in the Aramaic, but Peter or Kepha, rock. Either way. Take the Aramaic name, take the Greek name, rock. You're going to build on the rock. You know, we had a Hazino. Hatsur Tamim Palo. The rock, blameless. So, blameless means, you know, I mean, what did Jesus tell us about? Denial.
If you deny me, I will deny you.
If you deny me before men, I will deny you before my Father who's in heaven. And we always take that to mean, well, then don't deny Yeshua or you'll go to hell for sure. Right? After all, he's going to deny you before God the Father. God the Father is going to, you know, pass his counsel on to the Son. The Son going to judge. You're out of there. And goodbye. Go to hell. Right? He puts Peter in there as well as Judas. Peter's the first guy. Judas the last guy. And Peter, he says, I'm going to build something on you. I'm going to build the church on you. Well, really, the eclectic, the called out ones. Oh, no, ecclesia. Huh?
Yeah, call out.
Same thing, though, eclectos. Ecclesia, called out. Ek kaleo. Ek is out,
okay.
Kaleo called.
Got it.
Called out. You're out of this world. You're nuts. You're a nutcase. And what does he say to him? When he's about to get crucified, the night before, he says to Peter, he's at the Passover there having a good time.
What a cock crows thrice.
Thrice?
Three times.
You'll deny me three times.
You'll deny me?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. I thought, you know, he's got to deny him before the Father then three times. You're going to build a church on this guy. Meanwhile, he's going to die. He tells him in advance, you're going to deny me. What kind of thing is this?
So you think this is the same theme that you went through?
Oh, you explain to me why Peter's not going to hell.
I'm not the Pope, huh?
See, you're not the Pope. It would have nothing to do with the Pope. The Pope wasn't around. Before the Pope was Peter. Right?
Right.
Before the Pope, Petros. Now the rock is Peter. Yeshua gives him the name. You're Petros now. You're rock.
He gives him a chance.
A stonehead. You know. Huh?
He gives him a chance to replay those cards out when he appears to him walking in the water and he says, do you believe who I am?
Do you love me?
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, I love you. Do you love me? Yeah, I love you.
Too.
Do you love me? Yeah, I love you. He figured out the third time, maybe?
But Peter also, Shimon also gets to do Teshuvah.
Don't you wish, you know, Yeshua would appear to you after you denied him three times? Gee, I bet everybody wishes Yeshua would appear to him after he denied him three times. Why would he even appear to him after three times after he denied him? And this guy didn't just deny him. He denied him so he could be crucified, right? I mean, usually when you deny him, it's so that, you know, you can live. Like they're going to kill you. And so you convert. It's called the conversos. There's a bunch of Jewish Catholics running around that learn to be Catholics because, you know, it's easier to you know, deny a central tenet in Judaism that you can't be a Jew and believe in Jesus. And so the way we do that is we convert. So they converted to Catholicism to save their lives. They converted in.
They converted on the outside.
And all the other guys that were martyrs, they said, no, I'd rather die than have you force me to believe in Jesus. And the guy said, okay, let that be a witness to the next guy. And then the next guy, are you good for it? We're going to kill you too. No, no, I believe. What do you believe? I believe you're going to kill me. So he became a converso, and 3-4 generations of Christians grew up because that guy's a converso. And we meet him. They're in Albuquerque running around in congregations, Messianic Jewish congregations. Come out of the woodwork. I'm Jewish, you know, I'm a converso. You know.
So Shimon denied him 3 times.
Shimon denied him 3 times.
Is that for Teshuvah?
And what do you know? He's running around, he's fine.
How did he do it?
Well, I'm just saying, he's running around fine, right? Yeshua built the church on it.
He lived through it.
You should live so long. He chose Simon, whom he also named Peter and Andrew, so they got brothers, James and John. Now, who are James and John? Sons of?
Thunder.
Now, who are those guys? Brothers? Fishermen? First two are fishermen? A lot of fishermen here. Galilean fishermen. 2 plus 2, first half. And John and James, these are different, these are interesting people. James, what did he write?
James.
Yaakov, he wrote the book of James. Now, these are guys in the inner circle. Simon, you're going to build a whole thing on him. Catholics said, we got the keys, we believe. James comes along, he writes the book of James. What did John do?
Revelation.
Gospel of John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, Revelation. Yeah. A lot of guys say, oh, he must have been 90 to do that. Guy lived too long, couldn't be the same guy. Yeah, that's the same guy. Eyewitness account. Form critics, they don't like that. They think I'm nuts. All right, that's the first four. So the first four, he's got the inner circle, and he's got guys that are writing scripture besides Paul. They're all here. And the brothers, pair of brothers. Then he gets to Philip and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas. See, it's pairs again. Philip and Bartholomew, Matthew and Thomas. And then the last four, a different James and a different Simon. So this Simon he calls the Zealot. You know, if you say Simon and two guys turn around, so one's Petros and the other's Zealot. You can keep it straight. But this is a second Simon. And it's the second, you know, James. James, the son of Alphaeus. Oh, well, James, the son of Alphaeus. Different guy. And there's a theory on who these guys are, but I won't get into it. And then Judas, the son of James. Let's see if you call him James. James will turn around. But Judas, the son of James. And the other guy, Judas Iscariot. Judas and Judas at the end. And Judas always at the end. And they even add the who also became a traitor. So he picks all these guys. He got the inner circle in the first four. One guy, the first guy, is going to deny him 3 times. And the last guy, he's going to die. He's going to sell him out for silver. And he's from Yehuda. He's the man of Kriot. Somebody look at Joshua 15:25. What's that say?
Joshua
15:25.
What's it say?
And Hazar Hadath.
Hazar.
That is Hazar.
Yeah, what's that? Kerioth?
Mm-hmm.
Kriot?
Mm-hmm.
That's a town in South Judah. So Yehuda, Ish, the man.
Mm-hmm.
It's a construct, man of. Ish. Kriot.
Oh, yeah, the towns of Judah. Here we are.
You've got a list here of the towns of Judah.
Yeah.
This guy is not only named Judah, he's from the town Kriot in the south of Judah. They really want you to know he isn't just Judah, he's a Judahite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they want you to know. Now, here you got Yeshua, son of David, son of Judah. and he's coming to redeem. When he's coming to redeem, he's got a lot of things going on. And one of the things going on is Rome. Rome is now the empire. And who's in charge? Who's the petty vassal? Abraham, he faced the king of Sodom. Who does Yeshua face? Hordos. And Hordos, nice Greek name. Hordos the Idumean. What's an Idumean?
Idumean.
An Edomite. So Edom's in there, Rome's in, everybody's in there. When he said the sun comes, you know, you got to be saved from something. Oppression. You got to be born at the wrong time when you want the Messiah. If you think the Messiah is going to show up in your lifetime, it's because you need it. And if you need it, it's because it's bad news out there. You got the Romans in there, you got the Edomians in there. And Herod's great. He's going to go follow in the footsteps of Pharaoh and in the footsteps of Obadiah's Edomites. Obadiah was in Ahab's court looking down, saying the Edomians, you know, looked down on the destruction of Jerusalem and went, ha ha, those guys got what they deserve. Remember what we talked about? The exalted will be humbled, Yeshua says, Matthew 23:12. The humbled will be exalted. So Yeshua has a humbled birth in the midst of great oppression by the Romans, the world empire, and the Edomians, headed by Herod. And they're in there going, kill this guy. And the Romans will do it. Herod will try to do it. And that's the card being dealt out, right? It isn't just Judas, the Ishkriot, that's going to sell him for silver. He's got the Edomians after him and the Romans after him. And the Edomians are going to try, and the Romans will. And they'll have a good time doing it. They'll strip the garments. They'll cast lots for the garments. They'll decorate them in thorns. They'll spear him, pour his blood out with water on the ground. I mean, it's a good time out there for the vultures and the carnivores. They kill everybody out there, and so, you know, add one more. Now, Yeshua devoting all-night prayer for this. He selects these 12 as foundation stones, and you get that in Ephesians 2:20, you get that in Luke 6:13. And the Hebrew equivalent, Shaliach, means a sent one. He sends forth these guys with authority, and that means they represent him. And what does he do? He selects these 12 to represent corporate Israel. 11 of them are what? Galileans. The only guy that sells them out is a non-Galilean. The only non-Galilean is Judah Ishkriot. You're either up there from the hill country, or you're going to sell him out. And they put him in there. He's got a real crazy gang of people. A bunch of brothers and fishermen, a lot of Galileans, but, you know, some diversity. A guy that's into silver and treasure. A guy that is a tax collector. I'm sure they got along really great. And I'm sure the tax collector got along great with the fishermen. You know, he'd been ringing them for money every 3 months. And the Romans, you know the way they set it up. First you collect our taxes, and then anything extra, that's your wage. The Romans would say what they want. So they'd say, oh, how many people are in there? Okay, we want this amount of money. And if the guy got it pretty easy, next time they up it 15-20%, you know. Until the guy really got to work for his extra, for his pay. Because he rings out everything that he can to give to the Romans, and then he's got to go get what he wants. These are nice people, these tax collectors. So Yeshua has these 12, including a money man, a bag man like Yehuda, and including a guy like Matthew, who's going to write a gospel, but he's a tax collector. And then, look what's going to happen. Judah's going to play the Judah. The only representative in there from the heartland of Judah. And he's going to sell his brother for silver. He won't like it, but he's going to do it. And the minute you do that, what was the first exile? The Babylonian exile, what did Judah do? The Babylonians are coming!
Shemitah. Proclaim Shemitah. Release the slaves. Okay, God, we believe, we release the slaves.
Nebuchadnezzar gets a brainstorm. What does he do? Goes over and knocks off the Egyptians. What do we do? Say, oh, he wasn't coming here after all. He was going over to this stupid Egyptian. Put everybody back in jail. Grab them all. Put them back in slavery. So then what does Nebuchadnezzar do?
Come on back.
He gets another brainstorm, comes over and knocks off Jerusalem. Now, we've got the Messiah coming, and we do the same thing. We sell him for silver. Re-imprison. Keep the king down, put him in chains, sell him into slavery. Sell him for silver. Crucify him. Israel's coming out from slavery. Forgotten. Selling brothers for silver. Forgotten. And Judah, you know, when he first sold the guy for silver, he was trying to keep him from being crucified. I mean, killed in the pit, right? And now what happens? Sell him for silver
to be
in order to kill him. This is sibling rivalry going straight back to Cain Abel. You understand? This links it to Cain Abel. Judah, at least, he was trying to separate Cain Abel out. His half measure with the brothers. What does it to have his blood on our head? Let's make a profit selling him for silver. Which he repented, backed out. Which Judah Iscariot, the bag man, the chosen disciple, with the Lord's counsel and an all-night prayer vigil. Do you get that in your head? I'm trying to show you paradox here. But then God's telling Yeshua to have a traitor in there and an all-night prayer vigil so he can get sold out for silver. And he knows it with his eyes open for 3-year ministry.
But didn't Judah also, Judah Iscariot, say to the leaders of the Jews that I've betrayed innocent blood?
Yeah. That's fantastic. I've betrayed innocent blood. Yeah. He figured that out. Does anybody know when Yeshua turns and says, you could have been, you know, great, the greatest practically, or maybe the greatest? Where's that scripture? You find it. I'll keep talking.
Isn't it in the speech that Dad makes when he bestows the blessings?
I don't know. Look it up. Find it.
I think it's Genesis 48 or something.
No. We're talking about Jesus saying
to
Judas, you could have been great. Instead, you did nothing. Yeah, Jesus to
Judas. Where does he say that?
Yeah.
Where does Yeshua say that?
Yeah. In other words, you know, even though he's going to build a church on Simon Peter, Judah Iscariot, you know, had a great thing. He was in line for something huge. He had a Judah card. And he screwed it up by playing it wrong.
Well, you're getting into a really tough area there.
Yeah, I'm showing you fate and free will coming together. I'm showing you that there's choice in the midst of all this disaster. I'm also trying to tell you, don't kid yourself when you're living your life. God's out there, and he doesn't have a problem dealing a Judas card.
And how does the Messiah go?
Just like he dealt one to Abraham, and he dealt one to Yeshua. Make an Olah out of your son. Are you good for it? Now, you're going to be ready for the test. But there's no limit to what he can ask of you. The limit is you. The limit is what you're willing to do. And he's not going to give you a test you can't pass. But the other side of it is, there's no limit to what kind of test he'll give you. If you're chopped liver, you're going to have a real opportunity to let your light shine before men, that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. That's your script. But how do you fit that way when God deals you the card? Will God deal you the card? Oh, if you're good for it, he will. What does it take, then, to be good for it?
Can you stop living knowing it?
Yeah. Putting him first so that he doesn't have to sweat the small stuff with what kind of choices you're going to make. If you're double-minded, don't worry, you won't get any cards. If you're double-minded, you won't get the cards. But if you're single-minded, you can't avoid the cards. On the other hand, you'll play the cards right. and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.